Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. At Beth Emmanuel, we are proclaiming the vital gospel message of the coming kingdom of heaven. If you share our passion for this message, please support this teaching ministry and messianic community with your prayers and financial contributions. To learn how, click on the donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
I always like to talk about Purim on the Sabbath before Purim, Shabbat Zachor. So we're going to take time off from the book of Hebrews. I'll teach you something new. You know, Purim, the whole book of Esther, the Megillah, the scroll. Megillah means scroll. Megillat Esther, the scroll of Esther, is full of secrets, full of mysteries. We have a costume party. Why do we have a costume party at Purim? Well, it's like the whole story is in disguise. Even Hashem is wearing a costume in the book of Esther. You don't even see him. What is Hashem's costume that he wears? The costume that Hashem wears, that God wears, is that he doesn't exist. That's the disguise that God wears in the world. You know, people say, oh, God doesn't exist. It's just a disguise. One day that disguise comes off. Hine, here I am. Behold. And that's the moment of the revelation, the great revelation for which we're all working towards. That's the kingdom. That's the redemption. That's the kingdom of heaven. Anyway, so the story of Esther is a story about working towards this revelation. Hashem's name isn't mentioned once in the book of Esther. Instead, the word Esther, as I've explained to you in the past, the sages make an equation between the word Esther and the Hebrew word Astir, which is I will hide, as it says in Deuteronomy regarding the exile. And in that day, I will hide my face from the people, from Israel. So in this sense, it's a costume party, you know? It's like a costume party. So every year on Shabbat, before Purim, Shabbat Zachor, I like to peel another layer from the onion, or so to speak, or play a Scooby-Doo, where you come to the end of the Scooby-Doo episode and unmask the villain, and he says, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those meddling kids. And so today I'm going to teach you something new, peel away another layer. I'm going to teach you about Haman's gallows on which he was hung, on which he intended to hang Mordecai the Jew. First, before we get there, I'm going to work through the story with me. You're going to read along in the book of Esther for me. We're kind of getting in the mode. So turn to Esther chapter 3. I'm going to pay careful attention to the dates in the story. And I'm going to augment this story a little bit with some passages from the Midrash Rabbah that I'll be reading to you. I love the Midrash Rabbah on Esther. It's got great material. That story I told the children was from, that's Esther Rabbah, right? So I'll be just augmenting it a little bit as we go. Start in verse 7. Where Haman, who is very superstitious, you know, like Hitler, who is very superstitious. Haman is very superstitious, so superstitious. He wants to destroy the Jews, but he's not going to just leave that, you know, just pick a random day to destroy them. He's invoking spiritual powers to figure out what is the most auspicious day of the year to destroy the Jews. And so he's casting lots over a calendar for every day of the year. And these lots are called Purim. That's where the name comes from, Purim. So he's casting the Purim over a calendar for every day of the year to figure out what is the best day to carry out a genocide against the Jewish people. And so it says in verse 7, in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ashvarosh, they cast Pur, that is lots, Purim, before Haman day after day, and they cast it month after month till the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, which is this month, by the way. I mean, this is Adar too. What a coincidence. Anyway, so this is happening. It says in the first month. What's the first month? The first month is Nisan. It even said so. So this is happening in the month of Nisan, which is also happens to be next month, coincidentally, is also Nisan, which is Passover month, because Nisan is the month of Passover. So it happens to be the same month that Hashem brought the children of Israel out of Egypt. It's called the month of redemption. And that's an important clue to the story, because this is a story about exile. I mean, think about it. Why are the Jews in Persia in the first place? What are they doing in Susa in the first place? They're in exile. Just as the Jewish people in Egypt were in exile waiting for the redemption, so too the Jewish people in Persia in the story of Esther, and they're looking for the redemption. They're in exile after having been deported from the land of Israel by the wicked Assyrians and the Babylonians. And so it says, "Then Haman said to the king, 'There's a certain people scattered abroad, dispersed among the peoples, in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people. They don't keep the king's laws. It's not in his best interest to tolerate them.'" So this is the language of anti-Semitism that's been used over and over and over through the generations to breed this hatred of the Jewish people from country to country, from kingdom to kingdom. And it's not just, if you look at it closely, the accusations he's bringing against the Jewish people is not just a hatred for the Jewish people, but rather a hatred for the laws of the Jewish people. A hatred for the Torah, which is actually a hatred for God. It's a hatred for God that lies behind anti-Jewish sentiment, anti-Israel sentiment. So he says, "So if it please the king, let it be decreed they all be destroyed. And by the way, I'll throw 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charge of the king's business. They can put it in the king's treasuries." So he makes sure that the king accepts that it's a large bribe, 10,000 talents of silver. How much is that? That's like $10 million or something like that. Huge amount of money. So the king took his signet ring, gave it to Haman, the Agagite, the son of Hammedatha, enemy of the Jews. He says, and the king said to Haman, "The money is given to you, the people also to do with as seems good." And now check this out. We're going to get a solid date. "Then the king's scribes were summoned on the 13th day of the first month, and an edict, according to all Haman commanded, was written. And they send it out all over the world, and everybody receives this edict about the annihilation of the Jews. It's a law that's been put into effect, the annihilation of the Jews. Everybody's getting this edict, and they've chosen a day, the 12th day of Adar, it says in the edict. They're going to kill young and old, women and children in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month. The 13th day of Adar, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, to plunder their goods. So these dispatches go out all over the empire. All over the kingdom. What day again do these dispatches go out? Yeah, 13th, thanks. 13th day of the first month. 13th day, got it? Of Nisan. So, well, you know what happens. Mordecai hears about this. Mordecai the Jew, and he warns Queen Esther, who is disguised as a Gentile, by the way. That's her Purim costume. She's disguised as a Gentile queen, and she's concealed her identity. Mordecai told her to do this, and so Mordecai urges her to go speak to the king, but she's reluctant. She's reluctant to do so because she hasn't been summoned to speak to the king. And anyone who approaches the king without permission is put to death. Or can be put to death, you know, if you approach the king without permission. So Mordecai warns her, says, "Don't think, you know, that you are the only Jew in the world who's going to escape this decree. And by the way, I mean, what did you think that God put you in this position for anyway? It might have been just for this very moment." And so she says in verse 16, she says, "Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa. Hold a fast on my behalf. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my women, my young women, will also fast as you do, and I will go to the king, although it's against the law. And if I perish, I perish." And Mordecai went away and did everything as Esther ordered him, which is surprising, don't you think? I mean, it should be a surprise to you. Because what day is this happening on? the 13th. We already learned that. So let's do the math. You go, Nisan 13, call that day 1. Nisan 14, call that day 2 of the fast. And Nisan 15, day 3 of the fast. Any significance to these dates? Nisan 15 is the first day of Passover. So she's going to fast on Nisan 13, which is fine. That's the last day of preparation before Passover. It's usually when you're cleaning behind the refrigerator. She's going to fast on Nisan 14. That's Erev Pesach. That's fine. People fast on that day. If you're firstborn, it's traditional to fast on Erev Pesach until that night, of course, when the sun goes down. Then it's Seder night, and it's a mitzvah not to fast. In fact, you're supposed to be eating. It says there's a mitzvah. It says eat unleavened bread, eat bitter herbs. And if you happen to be living in Jerusalem in the days of the temple, which was underway at this time as the returnees were coming back, you're supposed to eat the Passover lamb that night. But the point is that it's a holiday, it's a festival. You don't fast on a high Sabbath, right? So that's Nisan 15. That's the third day, Nisan 15, the first day of Passover. It's a festival day. How can you fast on a festival day? So the Midrash Rabbah says, 13th, 14th, and 15th of Nisan, he sent back word to Esther, but these days include the first day of Passover. And she replied to him, Elder of Israel, why is there a Passover? Sort of cryptic. Why is there a Passover? In other words, if there's no Jews left, if there's no Jews left, what's the point of keeping Passover? So he sends word back to her. He agrees to her request. And the Midrash says, and he spent the festival of Passover in fasting on account of that calamity. And so we read in Esther 5, on the third day. So the third day, now we're 1, 2, 3, 13, 14, 15. We're on the third day, right? The third day, Esther put on her royal robes, stood in the inner court of the king's palace in front of the king's quarters while the king was sitting. This is Esther 5:1, by the way. He was sitting on his royal throne inside the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace on the third day. So this is the third day of Esther's fast. It's the 15th of Nisan. It's the first day of the festival of Passover. You know, the Midrash Rabbah makes a big deal out of the way it says, on the third day. I'll just read it to you. The people of Israel are never left in dire distress for more than 3 days. For example, of Abraham it says, on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place far off. And of Jacob's sons in Egypt, we read, and Joseph put them all together in prison for 3 days. And of Jonah, it says, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days. And we also know that the dead will come to life only after 3 days, as it says, on the third day he will raise us up again, that we may live in his presence. And this miracle also of Mordecai and Esther was performed after 3 days, as it says, now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel, and she sent and invited Haman to the banquet of the 15th of Nisan. The banquet of the 15th of Nisan. It's Passover. That's the Passover banquet. I mean, I wonder what she's going to serve. What's on the menu for Haman and for the king, Esther's banquet. She says, if it please the king, let King Haman come, a feast today, a feast, a banquet that I have prepared for the king. And the king said, bring Haman quickly so we may do as Esther has asked. And they came to the feast. So this is the banquet. In verse 6 it says, and they were drinking wine. I wonder how many cups. They were drinking wine after the feast, and the king said to Esther, what's your wish, and what does she wish? She says, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and it pleased the king to grant my wish and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come to the feast that I will prepare for them tomorrow. And what will tomorrow be? the second day of Passover. Obviously, duh, Esther's in the diaspora. She's, right? She's doubling, of course. There she is. Anyway, Haman's on his way home after the banquet. He's feeling in high spirits. He knows, have 4 cups of wine. So he's whistling on his way home. It's still Nisan 15. He's had some drinks. And he says, you know, Queen Esther, she invites me and the king to the banquet. It's just me. And but then he sees Mordecai the Jew. It just, his, you know how the, sometimes you're like in a good mood and just one thing sets you, one thing can set you off. So what happens? He gets home. He says, you know, he says to his wife, it all means nothing to me as long as that Jew is still alive, you know, sitting at the king's gate. So his wife, Zeresh, and all his friends are there. And Zeresh says to him, here's what you should do. She says in verse 14, let a gallows 50 cubits high be made. And in the morning, tell the king to have Mordecai hanged upon it. Then go joyfully with the king to the feast. This idea pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made. So he's going to be able to really enjoy the banquet tomorrow, Esther's banquet with the king, just so that he can really enjoy. He's going to make sure that Mordecai Mordecai is dead by then. This is what he's looking forward to. So it's still the 15th of Nisan. He builds these gallows. It's Passover day, that same day. So gallows, you know, what do you think of when you think of gallows? I think of the Wild West and all the cowboy movies I saw when I was a kid. You know, they always have some gallows. There's always a, you know, with the rope, the noose and the guy who's like, you know what's going to happen next. It's going to be, you know, in comes the, you're going to shoot the noose down, boom, you know, that sort of thing. That's what I think of when I think of gallows. Wrong picture. This is the ancient world. This isn't the wild, wild west. This is the wild, wild Near East. That's right. And you know what you do with gallows in the wild Near East? You don't hang people from a rope. You impale them. That's right. You impale them on a stake. Boom. And they're impaled like that. That's what you do with gallows in the... Or you can nail them to them. You can just nail them up there. Just let them hang there, nailed up. Yeah, so that's the picture we should have in view. In fact, when you read the scroll of Esther in Hebrew, you can come and hear it tomorrow, it doesn't say gallows. I don't even know what the Hebrew word for gallows would be. It says eitz. What's eitz? Eitz, tree, the tree. It says a tree. So literally, Esther 5:14 says, make a tree, exalted. An exalted tree. Make a tree, exalted 50 cubits. So he plans on hanging Mordecai, or impaling him, or nailing him to a tree. The Midrash Rabbah wonders, why a tree? And it offers the following. None of Haman's counselors could give wise counsel like his wife Zeresh. Although he had 365 counselors corresponding to the numbers of days in a year, his wife was wiser, and she said to him, this man about whom you're inquiring, if he is truly of the seed of the Jews, you will not prevail against him unless you contrive something against him which no one of his nation has ever experienced. If you throw him into a fiery furnace, Hananiah and his companions have already been delivered from this. If you throw him into a lion's den, Daniel has already escaped from one. If you imprison him in a dungeon, Joseph has already escaped from one. If you make him sit on hot irons, Manasseh has already prayed and been answered by the Holy One, blessed be he, and escaped from it. There's a story you didn't know. If you banish him into the wilderness, it won't work. His ancestors have already been fruitful and multiplied in the wilderness, and they underwent many trials and withstood them all and were delivered. If you put out his eyes, there was Samson, who killed ever so many souls of the Philistines when he was blind. I'll tell you what you should do. Hang him, therefore, on a tree, for we have not found one of his people who was delivered from that. So we read in chapter 6, on that night, that same night, on that night, the king could not sleep. And he gave orders to bring the book of memorable deeds, the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. Now you realize the Jewish day, the biblical reckoning of the day begins at sunset. So chapter 6 begins that night, the beginning of Nisan 16. And what else do we know about Nisan 16? It's the second day of Passover, okay? It's also the first day of a new season called the counting of the Omer. So this is the day we count Omer number one. I'm going to count all the way up to Shavuot, beginning on the 16th day. So the king cannot sleep that night. And this is the scene where he discovers that Mordecai saved his life and has been unrewarded, uncompensated for this deed. So Haman comes in, and by coincidence, he's just came in to ask for permission to hang Mordecai on a tree. And the king asks him, what should be done for the man that the king desires to honor? And Haman thinks, who can he be talking about except for me? Right? And he says, well, bring some royal robes the king has worn, and a horse, and the royal crown, and that whole deal. And the king says to Haman, verse 10, he says, hurry, take the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Leave out nothing that you have mentioned. Now let me read to you from the Midrash Rabbah and just color in. So Haman went to Mordecai to find him. Mordecai was told that he was coming. He was greatly frightened. At the time, he was sitting with his disciples before him, and he said to his disciples, flee, so that you do not come to harm through me. For the wicked Haman is coming to kill me. And it's just so familiar. Doesn't that seem so familiar? It should. They said to him, if you are killed, we will die with you. He said to them, if so, let us stand up and pray that we may die praying. They finished their prayers, and then they sat down and discussed the laws of the precept of the Omer, that day being the 16th of Nisan, on which the Omer used to be brought when the temple was standing. Haman came up to them and said, what are you discussing? They replied, the precept of the Omer, as it says, if you bring a grain offering of first fruits to the Lord, and so on and so forth, from the Torah, the laws of the Omer. He said to them, what is this Omer? Was it of gold or silver? They replied, it was not of gold. It was not of silver. It wasn't even of wheat. It was of barley. And he said to them, how much was it worth? 10 kantars? They replied, 10 manas was ample. Thereupon he said to them, He says, rise, for your 10 manas have conquered my 10,000 talents of silver. Rise and dress yourself. What an ill fate is mine. Yesterday I was busy erecting gallows for him, but God was preparing for him a crown. I was preparing for you ropes and nails. God prepared for you royal apparel. I was going to request from the king permission to hang you. He has bidden me to put you on his horse. Rise and dress. He then did to him all the things mentioned above, and as he was riding, Mordecai began to extol God, saying from Psalm 30, O Lord my God, I cried to you for help, and you healed me. You have brought my soul up from Sheol. You have restored me to life from those who go down to the pit. All right, so then verse 12, Mordecai returned to the king's gate. Haman hurried to his house mourning with his head covered, and Zeresh says to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him. You will surely fall before him. And while they were talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther had prepared. And the Midrash Rabbah says, the banquet of the 16th. Of Nisan. So there we are. It's the 16th, and you know how things go down at the feast. Esther reveals Haman for the villain that he is, unmasks him, so to speak, Baha! Right? It's that Scooby-Doo scene. This wicked Haman! Zakai would have gotten away with it. He falls on her for mercy to beg for mercy. The king thinks he's trying to ravage his wife. And we read in verse 9, then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance on the king, said, and this actually, the sages say, it wasn't Harbona, this was actually Eliyahu Hanavi, who was just disguised as Harbona, another costume, another Purim costume at this moment, said, oh, moreover, the gallows that Haman has prepared for Mordecai, whose word saved the king, is standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, by the way. And the king said, hang him on that. So they hanged Haman on the tree that he had prepared for Mordecai. And then the king's wrath was abated. And we read in chapter 8, and on that day, the same day, King Ahasuerus gave to Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told her what he was to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman before he hung him, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Okay, and these things all took place on the 16th day of Nisan. So this whole story, as I've told it to you, this whole story, just to recapitulate, began on Nisan 13th. You know, I remember back when I first became, started attending a Messianic Jewish congregation. There was this teacher there I've mentioned a few times, went to Sar Shalom by the name of Dale Pedersen, and he would say, you have to learn the calendar. You have to learn the calendar. Because when you learn the calendar, that's when you start to see how God lines these things up. And so he'd teach a class called the calendar class. You know, you had to learn the calendar. Well, anyway, it's true. You start to see these sorts of things. And so, as I've told the story, this 13th day of Nisan, that was where our story began, with Haman casting lots. And Esther's fast began that same day. And on the 15th, 3 days later, she went before the king and hosted her first banquet, and that was the day that Haman built his gallows, his tree. And on the 16th, Mordecai was honored and exalted and saved from going down into the pit. And Esther hosted her second banquet, and Haman was hung on the gallows, on the tree that he had put up, as it says in the book of Proverbs, the wicked digs a pit and falls into it. Now the connection should be obvious to us. I hope it is obvious to you. In the month of Nisan, in this season of redemption, on the 13th day of the month of Nisan, our master told his disciples to go and prepare a Seder, to go and prepare for Passover. On the 14th day of the month, he was arrested in the garden. He was tried. He was hung on a tree, and entombed. On the 15th day of the month, he remained in the tomb, but that night the king could not sleep, it says. And he rose from the dead on the 16th day of the month, the 16th day of Nisan. The first day of the counting of the Omer, by the way, and the anniversary of the day of Esther's second banquet, and the day of Haman's death. All right, what does this all mean? Could be coincidence. It's no coincidence. Mordecai, the man who was to be hung on these gallows, on this tree, you have to remember, was a descendant of the kings, a descendant of King Saul, in fact. Just as our master Yeshua was a descendant of King David, Mordecai was a Ben Shaul, just as Yeshua was a Ben David. So Mordecai is a descendant of King Saul, so is Esther, by the way. And I've explained to you in previous years when we've talked about the story of Esther, or even this morning, in the story of Esther, the story of Esther is a reparation. It's a tikkun for Saul's dynasty. It's because Saul had allowed he allowed King Agag to live when he was supposed to put King Agag to death, and Haman is the descendant of King Agag. He's the Agagite. And so there's this face-off again between the house of Saul and the house of Agag, and a chance to fix what went wrong in the past. So the story of Esther is a tikkun, but it's not only a tikkun, a correction for Saul's dynasty, it's a little picture of what the redemption, what the final redemption might have looked like. Let's just suppose that the dynasty had stayed with King Saul. Suppose the monarchy had stayed with King Saul. Then what? What if there'd never been a David? What if there'd never been a David that came along, but that the crown went to Jonathan, and from Jonathan to Jonathan's son, and so on and so forth? Then what? Well, then you would need Messiah to come from the house of Saul. That's right, a Benjamite Messiah. If the promise had remained with the house of Saul, if the crown had remained with the house of Saul, then the messianic promises that God gave to David would have gone to the house of King Saul and to the tribe of Benjamin instead of the tribe of Judah, and the Messiah would have been a son of Saul rather than a son of David. And surely, who do you think it would have been? Mordecai, the Jew. The Yehudi. He says, the Yehudi, the Jew, who faced the tree and the cross for the redemption of the people of Israel. Okay, things didn't go that way. You know, it's a costume party, and history took a different turn. You know, it's a different time stream. But the story of Esther is here to give us a hint of what might have been, of what could have been. An alternate ending to the story of the ultimate redemption. But not only that, it provides us with insights into the final redemption, and it provides us with hints toward what had to be, how this redemption had to come about. The story of the ultimate redeemer, not from the house of Saul, but from the house of David, and his encounter at Passover time with Haman's gallows.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.